and welcome to Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing in the wee hours of Monday morning after a very full day in the NBA on Sunday. This gentleman from Manscaped, Mark J. Spears, was at one of the big games on Sunday where the Nuggets came in and beat the Golden State Warriors, a game he attended at Chase Center in San Francisco. But he's now across the bay in Oakland. Mr. Spears, how are you?
Oh, man, I didn't have enough time to get my late night beverage. I was going to crack a bottle or something, you know, but I felt like it was, if I can't share it with my brothers, then it wouldn't be right.
Well, here's the thing. Our man here, Mr. McMahon, who we'll discuss in a second, he's not much of a wine guy. You know, I'm not sure he could tell the difference between red and white. He likes the hop. He likes the hops. He's an old school basis. Simple man. He likes a good beer. And that's where I'll start with Mr. Ben McMahon from Dallas, Texas.
Howdy, partners. I would love to take a trip over to the beer fridge and crack one open, but I don't think I quite have the kind of, you know, the kind of pull that you do, Spears, where I might be able to get away with such a thing.
So
you're at home.
I know, but I can't drink and pod. Come on, man.
Why?
Listen, like I said, I'm not you're one home. Who can take those. I'm just saying.
What do we think here? We should. I mean, on ESPN, no way. This is ESPN2.
Well, I think I get myself in enough trouble running my mouth without the aid of some IPAs or lagers. So,
but you're not even driving. You're at the crib.
I am at the crib.
Do you think that you literally, if you had four or five gulps in this next 45 minutes to an hour, that it would impede your ability to?
Are you telling me you want me to go to the fridge?
I don't know. Maybe we need a ruling on this. I mean, it's very late at night after a long weekend of work.
Yeah.
What's the ruling?
I don't know if I'm allowed. Like, I don't know if it would be a violation of company policy. That's my concern.
You're thinking too hard, man. There's no podcast rules.
I need some clarification on that. I got a daughter starting college next year. I can't be taking these kind of risks.
All right, Jackson, what's the ruling on this? What do you think?
McMahon got fired for drinking a beer at his own house. Come on, bro. You're thinking too hard.
Jackson is not ruling in. He does not want it on his
No, Jackson's like, this ain't my responsibility. I'm drinking his pay grade.
I'm drinking water provided to me by
the Marriott water?
ESPN. I was refilled here at ESPN because I reuse my plastic bottles because I'm a good person.
How responsible of you.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I
thought we were going to get him to drink some beer, Spears, but it looks like he's not going to do that.
I wouldn't have been scared, man. If I had time, I'd give me a glass of wine.
All right. Well, the night is still young. Anyway, Spears, I know Mr. Joker, Nikola Jokic, likes a good wine and spirit after a good victory. He might have been cracking one open after they came back and beat the Warriors. And I'm just going to be honest here. Like, Warriors have been playing better, and they got a lot going their way. And there's big news this weekend when Steve Kerr got a two-year, $35 million contract to extend his deal past this season. But the Nuggets own the Warriors. They have beaten them, I think, seven or eight times in a row. Swept the season series the last 2 years. And look, regular season basketball is what it is. But this was a game that the Warriors came in playing really well in. And it would have been a good thing for them with their sort of new style and, you know, new lineup to show themselves that they could handle the Warriors, especially on their home court, and especially handle the Nuggets. And especially the way the last meeting went back in early January when they blew that 18-point second-half lead and Jokic banked it in from half court. But that's not what happened today. The Nuggets took it to them and had a very impressive win.
Well, and the interesting thing was the Warriors had a great start. Klay was amazing in the first half. And then about midway through the second quarter, I turned to another writer to my right, and I'm like, so when are the Nuggets taking over? Mm-hmm. I'm like, when is it happening? And they go on this like 14-0 run, 14-1, 14-0, something like that, to finish the second half. And then Klay was magical in the first half and didn't score in the second half. And then Joker was just absolutely obscene. Like, I'm just looking at his stats as we're going along, and I'm like acting like a kid who just – you know, like just sitting there, you know, one of those statistical nerds who's just like, I'm like, that's his fourth assist. That's his fourth steal. And he's on my fantasy basketball team. So I keep getting updates.
Oh, I see.
Oh, you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm
impressed. What did he go? 32, 16, 16 with four steals? I mean, come
and
on.
And a block. Right? Everything counts and a block.
No, I mean, it's just sickening what he did. And, you know, they're trying to, put Draymond into it and to it guard this guy. And nobody can guard him.
It doesn't matter. Anthony Davis 16
assists, bro?
16 assists.
16 assists? Like, come on, man. Four steals?
And he just makes it look easy. And you said you're kind of just waiting for the Nuggets to take over. Like, okay, when are Joker and the Nuggets getting rolling? And honestly, that's kind of how the season feels too, right? They come out of the All-Star break and like they coasted into the break. They lost three straight. They're sitting there in fourth place in the West. And you still kind of feel like, okay, are the Nuggets going to like stop hitting the snooze button? Are they going to take this seriously? They come out of the break. In the three games since the break, Joker has 82 points, 50 rebounds, 45 assists. The only other person in NBA history to go 80, 50, 45 over three games, I'm pretty sure you can guess who it was. Like, it's anytime there's the only other person, it's always Wilt.
Right.
It's always Wilt. Yeah. But that's what Joker's doing. Dude, the guy's put up monster triple-doubles in the last three games.
Yeah.
Coming straight out of the break, He had a what was it, like 21, 15, 15 without missing a shot from the floor?
10 of 10. 10 of 10.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, you hear a lot of the MVP talk, and I'm in Dallas, so I'm hearing a lot of, it's got to be Luka, it's got to be Luka. And my thing is, look, you can make a good case for Luka. You can make a good case for SGA. You can make a decent case for Giannis. You can't – they all have decent cases that they're having MVP caliber seasons. You can't make a case that they're having a more valuable season than Joker, who is just clearly the best player in the NBA.
And does everything. I mean, can't jump over a piece of paper and just, you know, I saw him, Ryan, I told you this. I saw him in the Hoop Summit, you know, when he was coming into the NBA, and it's like, this guy can't jump, but he passes like Kevin Love. He can shoot the ball. I saw something incredible then, but you know, everybody else, and including myself, saw this portly guy, and they're like, yeah, I don't know how this translates. And when you look at where he got drafted, right?
I mean, they drafted him to be a
41st, right?
I mean, just to be
his
clear,
his story's like, pretty incredible, man.
Right. I mean, they drafted him in the same draft that they drafted Yusef Nurkic.
Yeah.
Who they took in the lottery. And so they drafted Nurkic to be their franchise center, and they drafted Jokic to be his backup. Maybe, you know, maybe he makes it, maybe he doesn't. But, you know, one thing I'll say about this game, obviously Jokic was great. I think you might've talked to him after the game.
Yeah.
But Jamal Murray, now I think one of the interesting things with Denver is he's been dealing with this for a few weeks now, and it's now pretty clear he's got essentially shin splints.
Yeah.
Tibia inflammation is what the Nuggets are calling it. I don't like bones being inflamed. I don't like that. That's my unofficial opinion. Not good when bones are inflamed. I didn't know bones could get inflamed, but when you get worried about anything with a tibia, because you don't want to have it be a broken tibia. So they're being careful with him about workload, and that's something to monitor the rest of the season and also in the playoffs about whether he can stay out there. But here's what I'm going to tell you. When he plays this year, the Nuggets are 30-12.
Yeah.
Okay. Wherever they are in the Western Conference standings, and I know that they've backslid a little bit, and they were in fourth after the break. They're 9-7 when he doesn't play. So, you know, there's some things about the Nuggets. Their defense hasn't been as good this year, although it's very good in clutch situations.
Yeah.
They have, you know, once again, been sort of average on the road. Coming into the game on Sunday, they were only two games over 500 on the road. And that was obviously an excellent win, but they were 22-5 at home. And like 19-17 or something on the road. So, you know, you would think a team that would benefit despite their experience in DNA, they would benefit from getting, you know, a better seed in the playoffs. And But then you see that number and see 30 and 12, and you see how Jamal Murray played today. I mean, he got declared active within 20 minutes before the game. He was questionable up until then, and he goes out there and has just a masterful game. I think he had 27 points. He had some assists and rebounds, and I think he was plus 18. You know, yeah. He and Jokic doing that. And so the thing about it is, Spears, like, I don't know what Jokic said after the game to you, but if Murray's healthy and Jokic is playing, I mean, everybody else might just be messing around, even a team like the Clippers, who I think very, very highly of.
You know, I also talked to Murray after the game, and we talked a lot about his, like, mental strength. And I kind of asked him, I'm like, is, you know, injury is basically your biggest opponent. Kind of smiled, maybe snarled a little bit about that. But that's his biggest opponent. And I thought he was outstanding in the playoffs, but the, like, aura of Joker is so huge that this is probably the most underrated number two player in the league. You know, I asked him about not being an all-star, having never been an all-star, and obviously he's had these injuries, and he's like, I know I'm better than a bunch of guys who are in the game. I know this. I don't need to go to this game to prove that. And he was actually at a UFC fight in Anaheim. Surprise, surprise, right? During All-Star weekend. But you're right, man. Like, even as amazing as Joker is, he needs the Robin to his Batman, right? He needs him to be healthy for them to win. And I think Murray, even with the championship, he still laments on all the time that he missed in the postseason that could have been something special. But he has a ring. He's trying to fight through it. I think Malone's trying to be smart and just kind of get him ready for the postseason. But, you know, playing 36 minutes tonight with such an injury is pretty significant, and he was outstanding as well.
And shin splints are painful, and the only way to get rid of shin splints is to rest. Last year, the Nuggets had the luxury of resting their main guys down the stretch. And Joker basically decided he didn't care about the MVP. They took their foot off the gas. They had a comfortable lead for the number one seed in the West. And they were able to just coast down the stretch of the season, make sure all their main guys were fresh going into the playoffs. They're not going to have that luxury this season. It's probably going to be a scrap down to the finish for the order of the seeds, maybe even one through four. Certainly, I think at the top, it's going to be a scrap. So they might have to, at some point, make the decision. Is it more important to have Jamal Murray as healthy as possible or to get the number one seed? And, yeah, you know, as far as him never being an all-star, I don't think there have been seasons where he was snubbed in favor of a less deserving player, because the all-star is based on the regular season up until that point. Now, I do think if you look at the All-Star game, you can say, hey, you're going into a playoff series, would you rather have Jamal Murray or this guy? And it's going to be Jamal Murray on many occasions. Mm-hmm. And for a while, people talked about Bubble Murray. It is playoff Murray. It's not a one-time fluky situation. And he proved that without a shadow of a doubt last year when he played at a legitimate co-superstar level throughout a championship run.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that we're going to end up getting tired of talking about the changes in the order in the Western Conference. It's so tightly packed. So, for example, on Sunday, Dallas lost for the first time in literally weeks, right, McMahon? It had been three weeks.
Seven-game win streak got snapped.
They got beat up in Indy by 20, and they fell from fifth in the West to eighth.
Golly.
So
yeah, and if the Kings would have lost, they'd have finished the night in seventh.
Yeah. Right.
And but meanwhile, they're in fifth now.
That's funny.
No, they're in eighth now. Oh, yeah, you're talking about the Kings.
The Kings, by the way, won their third straight game on Sunday night in LA against the Clippers. And they're battling back. So
the box of chocolate Kings, man. I keep talking to Mike Brown about this. He can't figure them out. I think the great thing about their win over the Clippers is they're finally playing to the level of their competition. Like, that was a huge win. But the Kings will beat the Clippers, and then they'll beat Denver, and then they'll lose to Portland or San Antonio, right? Like, or lose to Memphis on the road. Like, they are probably the most confusing team in the league to me right now. But
yeah, well, they,
the Kings will tell you that their record now is still better than it was at the All-Star break a year ago.
That's true. But I would just say, like, they were in a position where literally every other team in the top 10 in the West was playing better than them for like 10, 12 games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they had to put the gas down. They were going to get lapped. And so they've won three games in a row, and they're still, in fifth place by a half game. If they had lost tonight, they wake up at the beginning of the week on Monday in fifth place because they had that big win. Had they lost the game, as you mentioned, they'd have been the team down in eighth.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be this way for a while. And, you know, Denver is in that. You know, there is a pretty big gap in between the fourth seed and the fifth seed in the West.
Yeah.
Denver hit the break at four, but they're a game and a half out of one. And
those five and six spots too, man. Gosh.
Yeah. So,
and we've talked about the difference between five and six, guaranteed a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And seven and eight, where you're facing a really good team in that game, and then you're facing either the Lakers or the Warriors with your season on the line if you don't win 7-8. I mean, it is the difference between six and seven right now is a tiebreaker scenario, but those seeds is such a massive difference. As far as your outlook in mid-April.
The other thing is the schedules are all over the board. So the Nuggets have the fifth easiest schedule the rest of the way. If you're a Suns fan, and if you're a diehard Suns fan, you probably already know this. But if you're a Suns fan, and we'll talk about the Suns in a minute more fully about their victory they had on Sunday against the Lakers, you have no time to waste. And the reason is that the Suns' schedule at the end of the season is as vicious of a stretch as you'll ever see. And so that's one of the things that you look at when you're trying to figure out where this is going to go, these standings, is just who's got the tougher schedule. So if you're a Suns fan, like, you have to almost think you got to win almost every home game the rest of the way. You're already fighting, to me, for the Suns in, you know, quasi must-win games, because when they get to this schedule, which I'm going to read to you now, they're just flat out going to take losses. I mean, unless they're red hot, they're going to take losses. And Bradley Beal is still not back with the hamstring.
Yeah. And, you know, Bradley worked out like right after the All-Star break. He had his nose surgery. So he was going to go to like Turks and Caicos, or maybe the Dominican Republic. He was thinking about either place, but then he had his nose surgery. He worked out last Wednesday. And there was a lot of optimism that he was going to come back Thursday. Like, that was the expectation. And not only did he not play Thursday, he hasn't played since. And it's just, I know from, you know, doing a diary with him, this has been an excruciating season for him. Very frustrating season for him. And he's, you know, when he plays, I mean, he had a 43 game this month against Washington. He had a 30 game versus Utah. Like, he could cause damage, but they got to get used to him being on the floor. He's got to be there, and they're certainly missing him. And it's had a huge effect on their record and what the Suns are doing right now.
Yeah, well, I know you've been doing a diary that you mentioned with him on Anscape. I'll be interested to see the next entry, because I think he cut his workout Sunday a little short, his pregame workout. So not sure why he cut it short, but he did. I don't know if that's good news or negative news or neutral news, but I'm going to tell you the Suns.
I'm going to guess it's not good.
No.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. So I mentioned earlier about the Suns. They had a big win over the Lakers on Sunday. Here is the schedule that the Suns have. And this is actually instructive to anybody who is competing with positioning for the Suns as you consider where they're headed. Before I say this, I want to just point out that obviously their health is going to be more important than schedule, and Beal's health, especially right now. So this begins in the end of March. They have a baseball series in San Antonio, which you'd hope that they would take care of business. Although you remember they lost that game to the Spurs earlier this season when Wembanyama had a jaw-dropping game. Starting March 27th, here is the Spurs' final nine games of the season. At Denver, at Oklahoma City, at New Orleans, home to the Cavs, home to the Wolves, home to the Pelicans, home to the Clippers, at the Clippers, at the Suns, on the last day of the season, at the Timberwolves.
Wait, who, the second to last one's at the who?
At the Kings. Sorry, at the Kings. Now, you tell me how you think that gauntlet is going to go.
I mean, you know what? I think that depends on how the Suns are playing. Like they are, the Suns are capable of playing at an elite level if they're completely healthy, if their three guys are in a groove, but likely it's going to be a 4-5 type of stretch. And I tell you what, those two games against the Pelicans, I mean, put a double asterisk on those because those probably decide a tiebreaker. They already have lost a tiebreaker to the Mavericks. And like you said, they better get some work done before that final stretch, because if they're not comfortably in fifth or sixth by that point, they're probably looking at a play-in trip. And by the way, the other thing about a play-in is you're adding more minutes, more high-stress minutes on a team that has a couple of older superstars and three stars who have all had durability issues.
Okay, but let's talk real quick about, okay, go ahead, Spirit. Sorry.
No, I'm listening. Go ahead.
All right. So putting that aside, they did have an excellent win on Sunday, beat the Lakers. The Lakers have lost their mojo a little bit coming out of the break. The offensive machine that they were over the last 10 games or so going into the break has cooled off, and their defense hasn't been as good either. But really, that offense was powering their run. They did shoot the ball well in Phoenix, but the reason that the Suns won the game is because, in my view, is because Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen combined to go like 12 of 20 on three. Mm. When you have those sort of swing players deliver at that level, it's going to be really good. And I think the thing is you're counting on those guys to carry a heavy load without one of your star players. But that's why they won the game. But that wasn't what was amazing. What was amazing was Kevin Durant having a post-game walk-off interview with Katie George from ESPN. So Kevin Durant, he didn't have the greatest game. He was like 7 of 20 from the field, 22 points. And he goes over to do the interview. And in the interview, he basically trolls Charles Barkley and Stephen A. Smith and Kendrick Perkins and anybody who questioned his leadership. And I'm kind of loath to bring that story up because it's like a week old. Barkley did it during the All-Star game on the alternate broadcast for TNT. He was talking about, you know, Durant being a follower and not a leader, et cetera, et cetera. But Durant said in a minute and 20 second interview, said leaders or leadership or lead seven times. And what happened in that fourth quarter when you guys were able to hold off the charge? Leadership helped the ball go in the rim. We had great leaders. We're really leading.
He had a talking point.
The look on his face, you know what it reminded me of, guys? It reminded me of the look on his face. Do you remember a couple years ago when he was captain of the All-Star team?
Oh, yes.
When he was picking the teams. And James Harden had
just forced his way out. He had just forced his way out to Philadelphia.
He had already actually been traded, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's...
I'm not sure the private jet had even landed by this point.
I think they might be right. where Daryl Morey met him on the tarmac with a shirt, right? That like had him like in a Christ
basketball
pose
Jesus
or something.
Yeah, that's yes. Right.
All right. That's another story for another day. But you remember Durant like refused to pick Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And like he was again trolling him, like going, yeah, you know, we really need size in this game. I'm gonna pick Rudy Gobert. And he kept picking like big men. He had like four centers. And LeBron was on was the other guy picking, and LeBron knew what he was doing, and he kept not picking Harden too to try to force it into Durant.
He might have been auditioning to be the Pistons general manager. You don't know.
Right. Good line. So, and like LeBron at one point, like just he had to cover his face with the clipboard because he was laughing so hard. Durant had this like
stoic, right?
Stoic, but yet sarcastic look on his face. He had the exact same look on his face during this interview.
That's acting.
Yeah, right. Acting. He's made a movie before.
Yeah. Thunderstruck.
Never seen it.
I can't say I've seen it either.
I did. Sure it was, it's about what you expect. I mean,
okay.
If you're 11 years old or have similar maturity, it's enjoyable.
Better than Space Jam too.
it's on that level.
Space Jam 2 was called A New Legacy. It wasn't called Space Jam 2. Anyway,
my bad. <Just joking. laughs> Sorry, I got that wrong.
You know, look, that's the thing about Durant. Like the reason people keep saying this about him is because they know they can get to him. You know, like the other day he was coming out on the court in Phoenix, or no, it was on the road.
It was in Dallas. That was in Dallas, actually. Yeah.
What happened there, McMahon?
So he's coming out on the court and he hears a lady call him a bee, and he turns around and basically approached it was this lady and her male friend, and you know, they're like middle-aged people. And he basically was like, why'd you say that?
Yeah.
And he had a conversation with him, and he broke off the conversation when the guy's like, you really want to know? And the guy was launching into what was going to be a long story that started out with, well, I host this podcast on sports. In case he had heard enough at that point, he turned around. But
he probably listened to that podcast.
He made sure they did not get kicked out. But look, KD has
real quick
rabbit ears. He does.
Yeah, of course. They called him a name or whatever, and he came over. And as soon as Durant got near them, the guy, I think it was the guy, wanted a high five.
No, the lady wanted a high five.
Oh, okay.
He's like, no, you don't call me that and get a high five. That's not how this works.
Very strange.
But
I give him credit. I give him credit for asking the question, like not going nuclear. And he had every reason to go nuclear on them.
Well, listen, and that's the thing about KD. If you want to criticize him, just be prepared. He'll challenge you on it, whether you're some anonymous Yahoo on Twitter or the biggest name in NBA basketball media. Like, he's going to push back. He's going to challenge you on that. And if you want to explain your position, he's going to push you to have a legitimate explanation. And like the leadership thing. Leadership is a very easy thing to rip because it's an impossible thing to prove, unless it's a situation where you are the lone star on a championship team, which obviously Kevin Durant has never been, right? But I don't know, man.
Like, unless you're in that – look, I just had a piddly college career, right? But you're right, Tim. Like, unless you're in that locker room, like, how do you know?
Right, and that's what KD's saying.
Are there players on the team? Is like book calling Charles Barkley, like, man, this dude ain't no leader. You know what I mean? Like, and this is respectful to my colleagues, but how do you quantify leadership if you're not in the room?
Well would he have been a better leader if his foot was a half inch further back in that, game seven buzzer beater?
I will say, if you're looking, and if anybody has listened to me ever, I feel like I am as staunch of a Kevin Durant defender as there is, because I don't think he owes anybody any apology for the titles with the Golden State. Mm. I feel like they don't, maybe they win one, but they don't win both of those without him. And when he left, granted they were dealing with Clay's injury, but when he left, like, they went into a 2-year tailspin. So I just don't stand for anybody taking it away from that championship. But there is something to be said for him going to Brooklyn with Kyrie Irving. That wasn't
which Rich Kleiman called him out about. oddly.
Right. It wasn't a leadership move. Well, Rich Klein wanted to go to the Knicks.
Yeah.
Well, it was a move that blew up in his face, and it's a move that, like, he's recovered from. Well,
let's not act like the Knicks was the amazing choice at the time. You know?
No. If you're going to go to New York,
you got that's the spot, right? Like if you're going to go to New York, go to New York.
Well, and it was about pairing with Kyrie Irving. That's what he wanted to do. It blew up in
and the Knicks didn't want Kyrie.
Oh, please. I don't buy that. The Knicks absolutely would have signed both of those guys.
They wanted Kemba Walker at the time.
Okay.
Oh, man. They wanted Durant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Knicks would have done every single thing that the Nets did. And look,
they weren't enamored.
Okay. Well,
I'm just saying, and I didn't listen to the whole
thing. I didn't say that was a smart move. I'm just telling you what they were telling me at the time. But the thing that, I don't know, Kevin didn't go visit. He didn't talk to him, right?
Yeah, but regardless of whether or not he chose over the Knicks or whatever, the idea that he would go with Kyrie, sort of like where Kyrie selected, if you're looking to criticize him for leadership, that's where you'd start. And his case defending that is tough, however you want to define it. So I feel like I can defend him, whatever you want to say about his Golden State tenure. It's a little bit harder to defend him on the leadership thing after he kind of followed there, at the risk of putting myself in the same spot as Barkley. That said, that situation could have worked out.
I guess I'm looking at leadership a different way.
Right.
Are we talking about leading a team or decisions?
That's why it's a difficult thing.
Yeah.
But that's a tough thing. As somebody who's a staunch Durant defender, that's a tough one. I have a difficulty on that one. There's not much I can say about that.
Well, and the other thing, like KD is always going to have somewhat of a PR, stain, I guess you could say, not because he left Oklahoma City, but because he left Oklahoma City to join a team that had won a championship that was coming off a 73 win season. There's always going to be a perception that he's kind of a bandwagon hopper, and that he,
man, that Warriors move was brilliant.
But it was, people who like thought that he ran from OKC. Listen, man, if you're a superstar that gives a franchise 9 years, 9 years is an eternity.
Here's the thing, NBA. Man. I hate relitigating all this. I hate it. Who's to say that the Warriors even beat the Thunder the next year? They barely beat them that year. It took game six, Clay. All right.
Well, if KD was a better leader in game six and seven, they wouldn't have. That's what I'm just kidding. But that's whatever. Argument.
I'm just saying, though, that like, first off, God, I hate this. The 2017 Cavs were freaking awesome. Yeah, they lost 4-1. They lost 4-1 because Durant was the MVP of the finals, and they added an MVP to a team that already had a multiple time MVP.
They were damn good too, man. Like,
I agree. And of course, they were good. They won 73 games.
Golly, they're scary.
But how can you even guarantee they would have beaten the Thunder if Durant had stayed put? The Thunder would have added to that roster.
And you know what? At a certain point, we're sitting here arguing about how good of a leader a guy who is currently the ninth leading scorer of all time and a 2-time Finals MVP. When his career ends, Kevin Durant's going to be a top 5 scorer. And say what you want about how he got on the team or whatever. He's a 2-time Finals MVP who's going to score 30,000 some odd points in his NBA career. I don't know, man. We can talk about leadership all we want. Yeah. Give me that guy.
I know.
Give me that guy.
I told Kevin his biggest problem is he makes scoring look too easy. And it doesn't get respected. There's no way. The only person that can stop him from scoring is him. And he scores in a beautiful way. It's just effortless. He could close his eyes and score. And he's doing this at 6'11" or whatever, not 10, whatever he is. Watching him next to Steph, it takes a lot to see somebody that's as beautiful a scorer as Stephen Curry on a nightly basis. And he was just as beautiful a scorer as Steph. And I just think that his ability to just dominate offensively doesn't get enough respect because he just makes it too damn easy.
Well, be that all as it may, and leadership stuff aside, the Suns are 50 plus games into this now. And you know, the Royce O'Neal trade is already bearing fruit. Some of their roster changes that they've had are helping them. Looking at what they've gotten ahead of them and what they're able to do. And I've been a believer in this team since the Beal trade, even though I didn't exactly love that was the decision. I thought maybe they could have done maybe something else with those assets, but I understand why they went for Beal. I get what their concept was. It doesn't appear to me that this is a team that can really do a huge run the way they're constructed. They're heavily reliant on all three guys being healthy, and they just haven't been. They're heavily reliant on guys who have very little time playing together or on minimum contracts. You know, Bol Bol played a very good game on Sunday as well. How can you possibly count on Bol Bol?
An even better game in Houston when they lost the other night. But yeah, it's three stars, one of whom has rarely been healthy this year, Grayson Allen. And then a bunch of pieces where you're hoping, well, you know, can we get something here? Can we get something there?
Come playoff time, you're going to want to shorten that lineup, but you can't.
They need – here's the Suns' chance to make a deep run. Devin Booker and Kevin Durant can put on their capes four times in a series, a few different series in a row. It boils down to that, because honestly, I hate to say it, at this point, they just cannot count on Bradley Beal.
Okay, so they might have to do that with that schedule I just said. They might have to do that in the 9-10 game.
Yeah.
And then whoever they play. I mean, seriously, they're 24 hours ago, they were in the play-in.
They're in the play-in.
Oh, right. They're in the play-in. So,
oh, no, I'm sorry. You're right.
They moved out of it. They moved up out of it. But unless they build up a lead or, you know, achieve an incredible streak, they're going to take some losses towards the end there. I don't see how they're going to keep up. So, you are making a case, and I agree, like, Booker and Durant could get super hot. Beal could come back and they could get hot. But they might have to win two play-in games with LeBron and Steph hanging out there possibly in the play-in. Maybe not, but possibly. And then go in to a situation where they're without home court advantage, where they're relying on guys.
They're certainly going to have to start the playoffs on the road regardless.
That's
and
not
again,
a question.
It's tough because they've got, and that's what, like, if Bradley Beal's not healthy, they just don't have any chance, because it took absolute brilliance from Booker and KD for them to win two games in that series against the Nuggets. And it's not possible for those guys to play 44 minutes at the highest level over and over and over and over again in the intensity of a playoff series against that kind of competition.
Has it gotten to the point now with Bradley where you just basically like, look, man, we're going to give you 3 weeks. Just get healthy for the stretch. Like, you want to, because it just seems like it's one thing after another, after another, after another, the ankle, the hamstring, the nose.
Well, he keeps re-aggravating issues that he can't. Like, you know, like the back, I think he had three different bouts with the back.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, should you just basically like shut him down to mid-March? Maybe be overly cautious on him in the hopes that he could play going forward instead of trying to push him out there now and then boom, boom, boom. Which
maybe, but this is the problem with where they're at. And
there's not a lot of room for error.
Right. You know,
not a lot of room for error and not a lot of time to develop chemistry. Jail.
Yeah. No.
The season is so long. There's so much grace period that you have that you can recover. So I'm definitely not totally ruling it out, but I was more optimistic about this team at the start because I just thought that they would just be incredibly impossible to deal with on offense. And they've had moments, but it's been scattershot. And
yeah, because they haven't had those three guys.
I know.
When they have those three guys on the floor, they are almost impossible to guard.
Yeah. And Bradley used to be an Iron Man guy. I mean, there was a stretch where he, you know, played 77 games, 82 games, 82 games. And then ever since then, it's been dipping, 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 dipping. You know, 50 last season, 40 year before. he ain't an old guy. I mean, he's 30 years old, right? So
no, not, of course, yeah.
But no, he definitely needs to get in that ice chamber or do whatever he needs to do. Because I'm as great as those two guys are, man. The West is just too good. They're gonna need that trio to be amazing, I think, in order to do something special in the postseason. Well,
in the short term, they did get a nice win over the Lakers. And they are off until Thursday, I believe. So three more days to see if Beal can recover a little bit and try to get back. So
I don't know. I was reading coverage out of the Lakers locker room. Sounded like those refs got a win over the Lakers. Those refs did the Lakers dirty, man. The refs always cheating the Lakers.
The Lakers only had 8 free throws in this game.
Wow.
And LeBron after the game was, he obviously thought that he didn't get a friendly whistle. He talked about how he got hit a few times and didn't get to the line. And he talked about the narrative that the Lakers, all they do is get free, they get all the calls. And the reason that narrative is out there is because the Lakers have the largest free throw differential in their favor by a lot this season.
Like, the other reason the narrative's out there is because almost everybody in the league believes it. I mean, let's be honest.
That part, right.
I will say this, again, like with earlier when I said with Durant, like it's hard for me to explain the, defending on the leadership thing when he went to Brooklyn. When you talk about the Lakers and favoritism, yes, there's a bunch of different times when the league either actively or passively kicks the ball into the fairway for the Lakers. But if I were defending,
I like that analogy.
Wendy would know about that.
If I were defending the Lakers on this, I would say the vetoed Chris Paul trade kind of gives them cover. I don't know. Is it? It's been more than a decade.
Yeah, it's been a while.
12 years. But that was a.
Well, is it the Lakers or is it LeBron or is it both?
Well, Jackson's adding to the chorus here. Season low for the Lakers in free throw attempts, tying the fewest attempts in any game for the team since LeBron joined the franchise. Oh, I hear the violin music now.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, like, not to.
Mac 10 seeds leading the orchestra.
There was nobody in the Lakers media corps that was objecting to LeBron's position.
No.
I'm just saying, though, like, that's a tough thing to overcome, the Chris Paul veto trade.
Okay.
It's kind of like
you're digging in the crates there, man.
It's kind of like
pulling out a very dusty record.
All lottery conspiracy theories died on one night. I don't want to hear it ever again. I won't even listen to three syllables. On the night when the Knicks and the Lakers were in the Final Four, when Zion and Ja Morant were in the lottery, which instantaneously would have turned the tables of both franchises. Now, as it turned out, the Lakers ended up trading for Anthony Davis when they moved up in the top four. But Lakers, Knicks, who had not been in the playoffs for years, Grizzlies, Pelicans, it went to break, okay? The Pelicans and the Grizzlies got 1-2. And, with all due respect to RJ Barrett, the whole world knew that the drop-off was after the second pick. Okay. So I'm sorry. After that happens, I mean, not that I believed it in the past, but after that happens, there is no more talking about a lot of.
Well, what about the Spurs getting number one?
What's the conspiracy?
Come on, man.
They're going to make sure.
They're making sure that Wemby went to the right franchise.
Did he?
Pop. What were the other choices? Charlotte? Keep going.
There was a lot of teams in the lottery.
There's a lot of teams in the lottery. Listen.
Come on. The ones that Wemby has
been phenomenal his rookie year. The franchise has not had such a shining season, to say the least.
What were the other franchises? Top four.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. All right, you guys, during the break, you looked up the lottery odds last season. Go ahead and give them to me, man.
I'll just give you the teams that finished top five. The Pistons stumbled from 1 to 5. And obviously, the Spurs won it, Hornets 2, Blazers 3, Rockets 4. Listen, Spears, you could argue that the perception was that the Spurs were the best destination for
Certainly,
Wendy, you were
what was
there
number,
for your...
what was the challenger?
Okay, I should argue. Wendy, you were there for your 60 seconds of French glory on the on lottery.
I think it was like 73, sir.
Okay, well, listen, you know that Wendy. I mean, you witnessed in person his excitement at him landing in San Antonio.
Never looked nervous, did he, Brian? Did he look nervous?
They were nervous. I mean, listen, Chicago was in the draft lottery.
The Thunder were, you know? I mean,
here's the thing.
The Mavericks were.
First off, I already said all conspiracy theories died on that night. So true. I won't entertain this. But the NBA is not rigging one of the three smallest markets to get one of the biggest name players. I'm sorry. I mean, David Stern once said,
They made sure that Victor went to the safest place.
You're crazy.
Well, all I'm going to say is this.
Come on, Spears.
I walked into that room in Chicago, and I'm like, he's going to San Antonio. I don't know why we're wasting our time.
Okay, that's fine and dandy. But if the idea was to put Wimby in a situation where it was going to be just smooth sailing, it's been a miserable failure. Wimby has been awesome, and the Spurs have been awful.
I understand
that. I tell you what.
But there's a foundation there. There's a coach there.
Listen, man, there's a coach with the Dallas
Cowboys
for a
long time.
You
didn't
put him in Charlotte? There was frozen ping pong balls in that room.
Oh, come on, man. I reject all of it.
I don't think Pop has covered himself in glory this year. That's all I'm going to say about that.
All right.
I don't think Pop's had a very good year.
To that point, Victor, he's been flirting with this for a while. He finally had, I think it was on Friday, he had the 5x5 game. Points, rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals. Was it blocks and steals for him? Yeah.
Yep.
Against the Lakers.
I was at the sack game the day before.
Yeah. So he had back-to-back. What was it? He had back-to-back.
Back-to-back five steals game. And he was the first to do that part of it since Michael Jordan way back when. And that kind of piqued his curiosity.
Yeah. So after the game, he was getting asked about the first player to do that in back-to-back games since 1987 with Jordan. And Victor said instantaneously, did Jordan win those games? And because the Spurs had lost the games that he did it in. And he heard, Jordan did win those games. And Victor said, well, maybe someday I can do this in wins. And that's the thing. Like, the Spurs are not really improving. He's improving.
Yep.
He's getting better by the month.
Is he a defensive player of the year candidate?
Dude, I had somebody with another front office tell me they think he can be the best. Oh, you're talking about now? No, the Spurs, you can't be a defense player of the year or a candidate on a team that's that bad. But
those
I did have somebody in the front office
those
tell
steal
me.
Numbers are pretty crazy, though.
I know, but you can't be on a team that's that bad.
He's a he's an all-defensive team.
I had somebody with another front office tell me they think he's going to be the best defensive player of all time. And
wouldn't fight that.
Very confidently declare that. And that's in addition to the fact that this guy's got unlimited potential offensively. But I don't know. So, look, Wendy, you know Victor a little bit. I don't have any kind of personal relationship with the guy. So this is just, but that quote kind of made my eyebrows shoot up, because what I do know about him is he's extremely intelligent and he's very intentional. And I kind of read that quote as him saying, we need to be winning some. And I read it as kind of a nudge to the franchise of, hey, we need to be moving forward in the wins and losses department sooner than later, because this has not been any fun for Victor, despite the fact that he's doing some historical things as a rookie, being part of the worst team in the Western Conference. And they need to fast track this thing. They've got cap space this summer. They've got extra picks. They don't have infinite time to build around this guy. They need to make sure that this thing's moving 19. Forward.
It's 20. It's been 20 for 7 weeks.
I don't care who you are. When you draft a prodigy, just like the Mavericks with Luka, you are on the clock as soon as the pick is submitted, right? And obviously, he's going to get into a second contract. But you can't, you have to build a contender around that kind of prodigy.
Yeah.
And you have to take significant steps. And when do you often go back and compare to LeBron, just because, look, I mean, when you talk about this kind of talent, they're not the same player, obviously, but this kind of talent, they only come along once every 20 years or so. LeBron's Cavaliers got off to a terrible start, but they were a 37-win team his rookie year. And then, you know, they're a playoff team very soon thereafter.
His fourth year, they made the finals.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Now, you can argue that they maybe shouldn't. They didn't do the best build.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you told Victor his fourth year he made the finals, he'd be thrilled right now. But if it was a team that then had totally exhausted itself by his sixth year or seventh year, I don't know if he would feel that way. And I think that's what the Spurs are trying to do. The Spurs are trying to build something, especially under the current rules, that can last for 10 to 15 years like they did before. But one of the things that intrigued me about Victor when I first learned about him, and like I went back and read all kinds of interviews that he gave in French, and the French media.
You could read French?
Well, I translated them. I translated
okay.
them.
He got his Google.
Yeah, I translated them. Although
okay, you left that part out. I was going to be impressed. That Ohio education.
Yeah,
man.
No, I don't.
Public education, Ohio. Well, no, you went to private school.
No, St. Vincent, St. Mary's.
Yeah.
St. Vincent, St. Mary. Yeah,
French one and two class paid dividends.
No. I translated them, and the French media tells me he's a little bit more forthcoming in English than he is in French. Huh. Having said that, as I read a bunch of interviews that he gave as a teenager in French, I learned a lot about him, and the more I learned about him, the more fascinated I was. And I think what helped me more than anything is when Jonathan Givony and I went to Paris last year and spent a week. We didn't just spend a week with Victor. We spent a week with all of his coaches. I'm talking about his coach when he was 8 years old, and his coach when he was 11 years old, and his coach when he was 14 years old. And listening to them talk about how his personality was. And I am incredibly interested in his personality, and he is wired to be extremely, he's not competitive. You hear people are competitive. You hear that about a lot of pro athletes. Oh, he was so competitive. Like, you know, if he lost a paper, rock, scissors competition in kindergarten, that he would brawl with the kids. That's not what Victor was. Victor understood when he was like 12 or 13 years old, that he had a chance to be an NBA player. And I'm not saying he had it all figured out, but he operated basically on a daily basis throughout his entire teen years to build towards becoming the number one pick in the draft. He had that vision and he executed all the way through it and made a whole bunch of decisions that followed that path. So what you should know about Victor, what the Spurs should know about Victor, is that he enters the NBA with the intention to continue that path. He understands they're not going to be in the playoffs necessarily his first year or in the conference finals his second year, but Victor wants to see the team. And the same thing happened when he was, you know, he switched teams twice when he was, he changed teams when he was 17 to 18, he changed teams when he was 18 to 19, because he didn't believe that the team that he was on was going to help him get to where he wanted to go. And it wasn't that he went to teams that like had the best players.
Well, the move from Tony Parker's team in Lyon to Paris was more about playing time, right?
It was about...
Because the team in Paris was not good, really.
Until they played in the French League finals with him.
Until he got there.
Yeah. But I mean, the team he was with, Tony Parker's team was good. It wasn't a bad team.
No, they were the French League champions. He didn't like
the way he was being used there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a longer story.
Then they brought in Collet, but yeah, go ahead.
I mean, that's a longer story.
Long story short, Victor has been preparing himself to be an NBA legend, not just to be a number one pick, not just to be an all-star. He wants to achieve his potential. And I think anybody with eyeballs understands his potential is legendary. And, to be a last place team in the Western Conference, look, I get you got to be really bad to position yourself to get a guy like him. And the Spurs have done a lot of experimenting this year. A lot of figuring out who might be a fit long term, who's probably not. There's a lot more guys on that second list than on the first. I'm just saying, when you have this kind of a talent, there is a certain level of pressure that comes along with that clock that starts ticking. And it's a, it's not a quick clock, but 6 or 7 years happen sooner than you think.
Yeah. And Keldon Johnson, I talked to him about him. He's like, everything about his phone being off at 9:30, true. He told me he was amazed by Victor's just supreme diet, like the way he just eats in such a healthy manner and different shakes that he has and just his ability to not fall in love with social media. I mean, this is a guy that likes to play chess on his phone after a game. Like, what?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, when I was doing
likes that, right?
When I was doing the reporting on him, I would ask his teammates. I also talked to some of his teammates that were not his teammates anymore. In fact, when I mentioned that to him, I did some interviews with guys who were his teammates before, his current teammates when I got over there. Plus, I talked to guys who were his teammates from like the year or two before. And I checked some of this legends, you know, that he goes on these 3-hour train rides and reads a book. And I don't remember now, but, you know, sleeps for 12 hours a night. And they were like, yeah, it's true. And remember when I came over, it was me or Jonathan that said that to him. We were like, well, you know, we were asking some of your former teammates. And he's like, who'd you ask? He was like trying to piece together who we asked. But I think the point is that his reaction to the question and the comparison to Jordan was that these statistical accolades should not be a distraction from what's going on. Mm-hmm. He's okay with them. He's not giving the cliche answer like individual stats mean nothing if we don't win. What he's basically saying is that can't be a substitute. It can't be a celebration of me achieving some sort of statistical guideline if the team is not progressing. And the Spurs haven't progressed. And so I would think that I doubt he would say, well, next year we have to be in the play-in. And the year after that, we have to be in the playoffs. And the year after that, we have to be in the conference. I don't think he would ever say that. But he definitely will not stand for them to spin their wheels. And they have spun their wheels. And I'm not sure that this has been – Victor has gotten absolutely better. And his change of position to straight center and some of the things he's done have been great.
And playing a point guard with him after half a season of not doing it has been a pretty good idea and like a revolutionary concept.
You know what I liked about him was that All-Star weekend, how he was took a shot at Anthony Edwards. You know, they did the skills challenge, and Anthony comes in and shoots the ball left-handed.
I wasn't there and I didn't speak to him. It looked to me like he was simmering with frustration, anger, rage about how that worked out.
Yeah.
Isn't the goal
to win?
Guy.
Didn't you want to do this to win? Like, and what, you know, Anthony did affected him and Banchero. So it's just, I think Wimby almost saw this like this was a waste of my time. Like, if you're going to do that, why am I doing this? Right. So I do think that there's a competitive fire there. I kind of sense that the losing is you know, prior to your point, Tim, is the losing is wearing on him. So it has not been, not that losing is easy for anybody, but I think it's wearing on him.
Yeah, that was a very, very interesting answer. I could see ours coming back to that one. So there was some pretty significant injury news that hit on Sunday afternoon. The Atlanta Hawks announced that Trae Young was going to have surgery on his fifth finger, which I think is his pinky. Is that what you would call your fifth finger?
Yeah, that's the pinky. The fourth is the ring finger. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to show you the third.
Cool. Not that you haven't before.
I've seen that before. by the way, I don't know if you guys saw the play where it happened. I mean, historically, we've seen guys break their fingers, like getting them caught in uniforms. I mean, it's almost like routinely a freak injury. He was actually just trying to put his hand in the passing lane. The ball hit his finger. Like, it was nothing almost. And just a bad angle and bad luck. Just a huge blow to the Hawks, medium term hopes here.
Well, I mean, hold on. What were their hopes?
Well, they played their way into the playoffs through the play-in in the last few years. And, you know, a few years ago, they pulled off a couple of upsets. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to see.
They'll still probably be a 10 seed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, what my point is, they said he was going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. Mm. Didn't say he'd be back in 4 weeks.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
So
sounds done.
It sounds like it could be, if not season ending, very close to season ending, at least regular season ending.
Listen, could that have been Trae Young's last game in a Hawks uniform?
Okay.
It doesn't take a great leap to get to there.
All right. So here's what I'll say about this. Over the next 6 weeks that are about what's left in the NBA season, the Hawks are going to play with a different lineup, obviously, without Trae Young.
Yeah.
And we're going to see DeJounte Murray probably become the dominant ball handler, a guy who was very loudly on the trade market for 2 months and not traded. And we are going to see what happens when they play with Murray as the point guard or as the lead guard. And this could be a very fascinating, it could, by the way, be terrible. It could be inconclusive, but how the Hawks play without Trae Young, when there's a possibility of his future being elsewhere than Atlanta, is going to be relevant. I'm telling you, people in the league are going to be paying attention to this. The first game does not matter. However, in the first game on Sunday, they blasted the Orlando Magic, and DeJounte Murray had a brilliant game, almost had a triple-double. So let's keep an eye on this. And here's the thing about Trae Young. Trae Young was trending towards having a real shot to making All-NBA. Now, I wouldn't say that he was make it because he had proven that he was one of the six best guards in the league. But we have
positions.
There's no positions, number one, in All-NBA this year. Plus, there's a 65-game rule.
Yeah.
And there was going to be some guards that were just not going to qualify, including Jamal Murray. He's not going to qualify. We're just talking about. If he makes All-NBA, he would have been eligible to get the Supermax. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is interesting, because as the Hawks were figuring out what they were going to do with Trae Young, and I shouldn't say that. Let me take that back. I don't think that they were figuring out. When the Hawks were looking at their future, had Trae Young made All-NBA this year? Is Trae Young somebody you give a $300 million contract to? I think they were heading for an interesting decision there if Trae Young had made All-NBA. So he can still wait, I think, another year. But he is extension eligible this summer. And so I think there was a bit of a question about I don't want to make it sound like I know how the Hawks are thinking, okay? But you don't have to be a genius to realize that if you're looking at extending Trae Young, to the tune of 200 some odd million, or if he had made the Supermax 300 some odd million, that you really needed to make some big decisions about your roster, including whether DeJounte Murray stays or goes and whether the signings that you make. And so you could probably talk to seven or eight different people within the Hawks organization and get seven or eight different answers about the way they thought it would go. And now they get a look at the team without Trae Young. That's the point I'm making.
Well, and there was already a sense around the league that Trae Young was not going to be untouchable in trade talks this summer. Now, there's a big difference between not being untouchable and being shopped. I mean, there's a big difference there.
We're going to get aggregated. I can see the aggregation right now.
Right. I mean, but this is stuff that...
I mean, it does seem like DeJounte Murray was definitely getting the most interest.
This is stuff that's been reported as well by other people. I mean, but the Hawks have major, major roster decisions to make. This is a team that made a big-time, all-in, win-now trade for DeJounte Murray and is farting around in the 10th seed right now. Like, it doesn't take...
After being in the play-in the last 2 years.
It doesn't take a genius to figure out that things are going to be... the Hawks are going to look to shake things up significantly.
But why didn't they do it at the break?
Like, they clearly didn't like the offers that were on the table for DeJounte Murray.
Yeah, they couldn't find a deal they liked. And
he was like number one guy on the list. I kept hearing is gone. You know.
Well, you look at a team. Just for example, you look at a team. Who are they Who's everybody looking at? The Lakers. The Lakers had one pick to trade. Well, what happens this summer? The Lakers have three picks to trade. Suddenly, those conversations can get a lot easier. And listen, the Lakers might say, you know what? That's steep for DeJounte Murray, but hey, that clutch client who has a bunch of 30-point, 10-assist games all the time and really stretches the floor and is one of the best passers in the league, how about that guy?
Yeah.
Just for example.
Who just built a home in L.A.
A team like the San Antonio Spurs that still has some significant Hawks draft capital from the DeJounte Murray trade, they might be in the market for one of the best lob passers and a guy who stretches the floor, a pick and roll genius. Now, I don't know if getting Trae Young's going to be the solution to fix the Spurs defense.
You think they should move both of them?
I think the Hawks should go into the summer open to any and all possibilities. That I will say. And I think
I would just watch how DeJounte Murray plays for the next 6 weeks.
Yes, and I think that the Spurs, if the Spurs had interest in Trae Young, I think that would be very interesting, because I think if the Hawks are going to go into a rebuild around DeJounte Murray route, then their own picks would be of extreme value to them.
Well, I don't know if they want to rebuild. I don't think they hired Quinn Snyder to rebuild.
I don't know if they have a whole lot of choice.
Well, I think that they could potentially retool. They could, restructure the roster. And that may not include Trae Young at all. Trae Young may stay there. But, there are Hawks players who have been available. And I think the idea of trading Trae Young it's not the first time it would have been thought of in Atlanta. And so I think their standard would be very, very high. I don't think he's on the market. Call and make your best offer. But I do think
is the owner's son going to trade him though? ain't that his guy?
Well, it is interesting. It's my understanding that assurances have been given that Landry Fields is the person who's getting to make those decisions. I know that that was an issue with the DeJounte Murray trade, that Travis Schlenk was not in favor of that trade and basically didn't do the negotiation. And that led to him eventually leaving midway through the season. But I have been told and assured that that is no longer the case, that Landry is in complete and total control. Obviously, Tony Ressler the owner gets to sign off on all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But those words could be proven not correct down the line, but that is not the way it's been described to me. That if anything, Landry is more solidified, even though this has been a bit of a disappointing season, that Landry is more solidified than he was at the start. So, and Landry is a very smart guy. He's young still. There's people his age still playing in the NBA. Some of them are going to make the All-NBA team. But the thing about it is Landry came from the Spurs organization. Since he arrived, they've already made one massive trade with the Spurs, which was for DeJounte Murray. And so just like I would say that any Brooklyn Nets trade of any significant swap would probably involve calls to the Houston Rockets because the Rockets have all the Nets draft assets. I would say any time there's a potential significant trade for the Hawks that you'd consider the Spurs as a possible trading partner because they have all the stuff. And that's just the nature of the beast. So it's very unfortunate for Trey because it was a freak injury. And, you might be right, McMahon. It may not really affect the outcome of the Hawks. There's a gulf between 10th and the 11th seed. But certainly is potentially a very perspective-changing development. Is that politically correct enough to say?
For sure. And there's a gulf between them and the 11th seed, who right now is the Brooklyn Nets, that you want to talk about a franchise that's in rough shape. Then we've done that. We've talked about the Nets. So, look, maybe Trey comes
Ben
back.
Ben Simmons is out with more issues as well.
Maybe Trey comes back. Maybe he leads them to a couple of play-in wins and they pull off the biggest upset of all time in the first round. But likely it's going to be, it has been and will continue to be a disappointing season for the Hawks. And they're going to have some major, major decisions to be made. Should they be listening to inquiries on Trey Young? I think they will find significant interest and just going to be an interesting summer.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm looking at the Hawks where they are in the standings and thinking Brooklyn could fix some things to get up there.
The Spears don't do that.
I think the Hawks are going to help them, you know, because I think the Hawks are going to drop down as well. Brandon Miller.
Unless they get to play the Hawks 15 times the rest of the season, Nets aren't going to be in the play-in.
Now, I talked to Brandon Miller the other day. He said he hasn't given up on the playoffs yet. He's still working on it. They're 10 out.
does he have a fantasy team? What is he talking about? Who's he got on his fantasy team?
Man, rookie enthusiasm. They split their last 10. They split their last 10.
Did you hear that statement, McMahon? He hasn't given up on the playoffs yet. They're 10 out.
of the last 10 spot.
Right.
Listen, I know he was only in Alabama for 1 year. I don't think he took any math classes while he was there if he thinks the play-in or the playoffs are a possibility.
I respect the fight. And by the way, the Hornets are winning. They won again on Sunday in Portland. So.
Hey, man, you know. Wait, where?
When's
in Portland. I know.
When Ball coming back? Isn't he coming back soon?
Oh, here we – Jesus. Here we go.
They're 10 out.
Listen, all Grant Williams does is Charlotte's win, baby.
Oh, man, leave him alone.
I'm just stating a fact.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, like the Hornets racking up wins, it hasn't happened in a long time. So, you know, say what you want, but that is an interesting development.
Also, by the way, that reminds me of a funny thing today. Somebody after the Mavs win the other day, I think it was after they beat the Suns, somebody asked PJ Washington, was this like a playoff atmosphere? And PJ's answer was something along the lines of, I wouldn't know. I've never been in the playoffs.
I appreciate the honesty from him.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for watching, listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Mr. Spears. Thank you to Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. And thank you for watching and listening. We will talk to you later this week.
And we'll have an answer on libations.
I'm going to go crack open a nice cold cerveza.
Adios, now you're going to do it.
Off the clock, baby.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.